स्त्रित्यम्
नरम्
चैव नरतमम् देवीम् सरस्वती व्यासम् ततो जयामुदिरये नष्टप्रयेष्वपादेषु नित्यवा भवत सेवया So we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 4, chapter 8, Dhruva Maharaj leaves home, text number 38. Nunam
bhavan
bhagavatah
yaha
angaja
paranishtinah
litudam
atate
हितायाः जगतः आर्थवा नूनं भवान् भगवतो यं गर्जा परनिष्ठिना
Instrument.
Itaya,
Itaya,
for the welfare,
Jagataha
of the world.
Arkava,
like the sun.
Translation.
My dear Lord, you are worthy son of Lord Brahma, and you travel playing on your musical instrument, Veena, for the welfare of the entire universe. You are like the sun, which rotates in the universe for the benefit of all living beings. Dhruva Maharaja, although a young child, expressed his hope that he might be offered the benediction of a kingdom which would exceed the opulence those of his father and grandfather. He also expressed his gladness that he had met such an exalted person as Narada, whose only concern was to illuminate the world like the sun, which rotates all over the universe only for the purpose of benefiting the inhabitants of all planets. Narada Muni travels all over the universe for the sole purpose of performing the best welfare activity for the entire universe by teaching everyone how to become a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, Dhruva Maharaja felt fully assured that Narada Muni could fulfill his desire, even though the desire was very extraordinary. The example of the sun is very significant. The sun is so kind that he distributes his sunshine everywhere without consideration. Dhruva Maharaja requested Narada Muni to be merciful to him. He pointed out that Narada travels all over the universe just for the purpose of doing good to all conditioned souls. He requested that Narada Muni show his mercy by awarding him the benefit of his particular desire. Dhruva Maharaja was strongly determined to fulfill his desire, and it was for that purpose that he had left his home and lands. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nunam bhavan bhagavato yo angajah paranishtina vitudana tate vinam hitayo jagato kavat. My dear Lord, your worthy son of Lord Brahma, and you travel playing on your musical instrument, the Veena, for the welfare of the entire universe. You are like the sun which rotates in the universe for the benefit of all living beings. Om Shri Padma Krishna Prasadaya Shri Mati Bhaktivedanta Swami Pinami Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prasarini Avisheshi Sundarani Paschakare Sikharini Dhruva Maharaja concludes his request by glorifying Narada Muni, who's in front of him, saying that you are the son of Lord Brahma. Angajah paramestinaha etudanata tevinam yo. Playing your veena, you travel all over the universe, and you are the son. And of course, he's doing it just to fulfill his desire. He's very open about it, very honest. That's basically, I want a little thing. I want to become the king of the kingdom, which is greater than the kingdom of my father and grandfather. That's all I want. And because you are like sun, you can fulfill my desire. You are very powerful. You have this power to fulfill the desires. And as we said yesterday, it constitutes kind of cheating mentality in the beginning. Because they go to a saintly person not for the purpose of saintly person himself. The only purpose of saintly purpose, or of saintly person, of saints who travel all over the world, is to give us Krishna. Srila Prabhupada quotes in Bhagavad Gita the verse from, I don't remember that, but in this verse it is said that the saints, they traverse the earth only for the sole purpose to give Krishna. That's the only purpose. But as we said yesterday, nobody is interested in Krishna. We want so many things, but we don't want Krishna. Therefore, we come to a saintly person and we kind of try to circumvent their desire and to fulfill our desires. In this way, by cheating them, but they are cheating us. This is the normal dynamic in this material world. Somebody who wants to be, wants to cheat, usually becomes cheated. One disciple came to Srila Prabhupada and started complaining about Indians. He was from the west and was in Bombay. And he started complaining, these Indians are so crooked. They're so clever. They always want to cheat. And Prabhupada said, I'm also Indian. He said, no Prabhupada, you're different. Prabhupada asked, how am I different? Said, you're not cheating. Prabhupada said, no, I also cheat. I cheated all of you. Because you wanted something else and I gave you what? You were attracted. So this is exactly what is going on in this particular instance. Dhruva Maharaj wants the kingdom. And Narada Muni knows better what he needs. So he said, okay. Ultimately, he will say to him, do this, and you will get the kingdom. And by the way, you will also get the Supreme Lord. Because the very word, the very name, Narada, means one who gives the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explains this in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada. Narada means Narayana. Of course, Narada means the sum total of living entities. Siddharthana in his Bhavarthi Deepika explains the three or four basic meanings of the word Narayana. Nara may mean the sum total of living beings, and Ayana means the shelter, the one who is the shelter of the sum total of living beings. And also Naran means the truth, one who is the shelter of all the eternal truths is also Narayana. And Nara also means the water, and the one who is taking shelter in the water which is coming from his own body is also called Narayana. So but here Narada specifically means Narada, one who gives. Whom he gives Nara. He gives Narayana. He gives the Lord. And that's the specific purpose of everything which a saintly person is supposed to do in this world. He should give the God, you know. He shouldn't have any other purpose in life. That's why the saintly person, you know, live in this world. And moreover, it is the purpose which is delegated to them by the Supreme Lord Himself. It's very interestingly explained by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in the first chapter of Madhuri Padangi. He gives a very interesting explanation because his purpose is to explain to us how we can get bhakti. And it's a very difficult question, how we get bhakti, because bhakti by definition is causeless. He wants to explain to us what is the cause of something which is causeless. Because to get something, we need to know the cause of it. Right? If we want to get something, we have to know what is the cause of this something, and by, you know, using this knowledge, we can get what we want. So, Vishwanatha Prabhupada Thakur is trying to solve this paradox. What is the cause of something which is causeless? Because bhakti is on the level of the Lord, so by definition, Lord is causeless. The Lord is sarvakarana karanam. He doesn't have another cause. People have difficulty to understand the causeless subject matters, because we are living on this side of the causal ocean. And whatever is on this side of the causal ocean has the cause and effect. Whatever is on the other side of the causal ocean doesn't have any cause and doesn't have any effect. So, but we are programmed to be, how you say it, not causeless, but caused. So we are programmed to see everything in terms of cause and effect. And of course we want to obtain bhakti, and to obtain bhakti we need to know the cause of bhakti. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is asking, what is the cause of bhakti, which is causeless? And first he rules out what cannot be the cause of bhakti. First he says, sometimes people say that you can get bhakti because you perform some pious activity. You're just pious, you're a nice man, you're just, you know, you're doing some pious work, you feed some poor people, you give some few rupees to a beggar on the street, and you get bhakti. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, no way. It cannot be the cause of bhakti, because piety is material and bhakti is transcendental. Bhakti is spiritual. How spiritual subject can be caused by something material? It cannot be caused by material. The root of spiritual thing cannot be material. So he rules out, no matter how pious you are, you will not get up. Don't think that this is, you know, that, don't think if you give some, you know, money or whatever, this is not the cause of it. And he says, you know, the scriptures, when they say that, when they speak about bhakti, they use a specific term in Sanskrit, which is yadriksha. And yadriksha is a very special kind of concept. It is used many times in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is said, where do you get the faith? How do you obtain the faith, Shraddha? And Srimad Bhagavatam says yadriksha. And yadriksha basically means somehow. You get it somehow. You know, it's not really specified. You get it somehow or other, you get it. So basically he says it's an indication of the causeless nature of bhakti, because bhakti is on the level of the Lord. And because everything regarding the Lord is causeless, so the bhakti is also causeless. But at the same time, just to say that bhakti is causeless because it's coming from the Lord and it's just the causeless mercy of the Lord doesn't explain it. It just doesn't give any explanation. It's not satisfactory. Because first of all, you know, if bhakti is causeless and if mercy of the Lord is causeless, why some people get it and some people don't get it? No, if it's really causeless and Lord is so good and some people cannot really comprehend it, if Lord is so good, why doesn't he give his mercy equally to everyone? So he says, actually, the Lord cannot be the cause of bhakti. Because if it was for the Lord to be the cause of bhakti, then, and it's interesting, please listen carefully. If it was for the Lord to be the cause of bhakti, then the Lord would be guilty. He would be not impartial. Why does he give somebody bhakti and the others he doesn't give? Why he gave bhakti only to those people who are sitting here in this room and not even all of them? Why didn't he give bhakti to everyone else? You know, why? Then, of course, the counter argument could be, you know, look, God is partial anyway. He kills the demons and he favors the devotees. Somebody can say, this is the nature of God. But this is not. This is not a good argument. This is again Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's logic. This is very beautiful. He says that when Lord kills the demons and favors the devotees, that cannot be the cause of his fall. This is his glory. It's not his partiality, it's just his reciprocation. If somebody hates the Lord, the Lord, you know, kills him. If somebody loves the Lord favors him. It's his reciprocation, it's not partiality. But, you know, as far as the mercy is concerned, the mercy should be distributed equally. The mercy everyone should get, but not everyone gets the mercy. So then, you know, in this way, he ruled out the material piety as the cause of bhakti. And then he ruled out Krishna is the cause of bhakti. He says, no, it cannot be Krishna. Krishna cannot give you the bhakti. It doesn't explain anything. So then he says, who is the cause of bhakti? The cause of bhakti is a devotee, is a pure devotee. That's the cause of bhakti. Then again he says, if we say this, if we take this proposal, then how come the pure devotee is partial? Why does he give bhakti to somebody and he doesn't give bhakti to somebody else? And he says, you know, but this is the nature of, this is not the fault of a devotee, this is the nature of pure devotee. Because the definition of Madhyama Bhakti is that he relates differently to different categories of people. So you can't say that he is faulty, that he is guilty of not giving bhakti, because that's the definition. That's the very nature of a pure devotee. He, you know, he loves the Lord, he makes friendship with other devotees, he favors the innocent people who are like children, he gives bhakti to them, and he avoids demonic people who are not very So he establishes this in this way. He says that this is the essence or the conclusion of the scriptures, that the cause of bhakti is the favor of a pure devotee. And only a pure devotee can give us bhakti. There's no other way to get bhakti. Bhakti is causeless, but somehow or other, if we please a pure devotee, we can get bhakti. And we can see, you know, that Prabhupada is a good example of this. Because Prabhupada, you know, he came, and he gave bhakti to some who were ready to give. Those people who were inclined, who were innocent in the sense that they were not offensive. Those people who had little appreciation of Srila Prabhupada, they would get bhakti in a very miraculous way. One of my most favorite stories of Srila Prabhupada, how he came to a new community of hippies. When he was in San Francisco, the first devotees, first followers of Srila Prabhupada, they found out that Srila Prabhupada is very pleased when he's given an opportunity to preach. So they took him to a community where nudists were. And they were just nudists. They were very natural people. Too much natural. The clothes was artificial. So they rejected this artificiality. So they were naked and they were living there and they were worshiping the sun and, you know, were very kind of peaceful creatures. So it's a nice story in this regard. How Prabhupada came, one of these nude hippies, he was doing something in the field, you know, with potatoes. He was, I don't know, was then fruiting out the weeds or whatever. So when Prabhupada came, and Prabhupada was the only dressed person in the whole community. So when he came, he created a sensation. Because for a long time they didn't see somebody who is dressed up. So this hippie, he approached Prabhupada just to look at him. Because who is that? And Prabhupada, you know, looked at him. Here you see the encounter of a very cultured person from the very, you know, high cultured background of Bengali Vaishnavas, and you know, hippie who's naked and who's very natural. Quite gross too. So they are looking at each other. Prabhupada is looking at him with great compassion in his eyes. And he asked him, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm growing potatoes. Didn't you see it?" He said, "I don't mean this. I mean, what are you doing with your life?" And he said it with such a compassion, with such a feeling, that this person who looked at Prabhupada, he went to his room, and he dressed up, and he became a devotee. After just listening to this question, because he could appreciate the genuine feeling of compassion which was there. This appreciation, this little appreciation, is when we appreciate a pure devotee. This is the cause of bhakti. If we have just little appreciation within our heart, then we can get bhakti. Because pure devotee is eager to give bhakti. But something is required from us. What is required from us? Just little appreciation of what he is doing. Little innocence. As it is explained in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that the definition of a preacher is given, or Madhyama Bhakti is given, is that if somebody is innocent, like a child, if somebody is not vicious in the heart, then he can get the mercy of the pure devotee. Then the pure devotee will give kripa to him. If somebody is crooked within the heart, if somebody is not innocent, then he won't get bhakti. And this is the meaning here, because Dhruva Maharaj is innocent. Dhruva Maharaj is approaching Narada Muni in a very innocent way. He is not trying to hide his desires. He says, "Yes, I have some desire. It's a big desire, but I know you can fulfill it." And Narada Muni says, "Yes, I can fulfill your desire. No problem." And I will also give you Krishna. And then another very important point of this interaction between the devotee or between a prospective disciple or somebody who is a candidate to get bhakti and a pure devotee who can give him bhakti is that this process is not something mysterious in a sense. Because sometimes when we speak about this, or when we say that, you know, pure devotee has to give us bhakti, and he's giving bhakti, why didn't I get bhakti? I'm so innocent. Why it takes me so long to get the bhakti? And so on and so forth. There are so many stupid kind of conceptions which are floating around. Is that we also have to understand that you know, he's not giving us the Lord in a ready-made way, so to speak. Sometimes we want kind of instant bhakti, you know, like there is instant coffee. You don't have to worry too much. You don't have to prepare it for a long time. Just put it there, you know, coffee is made, it's ready. So when the pure devotee gives bhakti, he gives bhakti not in the same way. He gives us the process. He gives us sadhana. He gives us, as much as here Narada Muni is giving to Dhruva Maharaj, the process. It's not that he says, "Okay, here is the miracle. You know, everything is done. Here is the kingdom, and here is the Lord, and everything is there. Don't have to worry." No. He still gives us the process. And we have to work through this. It is specifically said here that Narada Muni is Angaja. Angaja means Parameshina Angaja. He is born from body of Lord Brahma. And in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where it is described how Narada Muni was born, it is specifically said that Narada Muni was born from the best part of Brahma's intelligence. Or as Prabhupada puts it, he was born from the best part of Brahma's deliberation. When Lord Brahma was in his best mood, there are seven Manasiputra of Lord Brahma, or sons which are coming from the intelligence or from the mind of Lord Brahma. But specifically, when it is described how different Manasiputras or these mental sons of Lord Brahma came about, it is said that Narada has come from the best part of his intelligence. And intelligence means something which we apply when we work. Intelligence is, as we know from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, born from Rajagun. Intelligence is very much connected with action. So, different sons of Lord Brahma, they're connected with different departments of activities. But specifically, when it is said that Narada Muni was born from the intelligence of Lord Brahma, it implies that bhakti, which is represented by Narada Muni, is also an activity. This is a very important point. That bhakti is not just some kind of idle meditation. I am a bhakta. It doesn't have any meaning. If you say I'm a bhakta, I don't do anything. So basically, the point which I'm trying to make by explaining this verse where it is said, Angaja Parameshtina, he is Angaja, he is the son of Lord Brahma, but he is born from intelligence. And when he is giving bhakti, he is giving us the activity. Bhakti is an active process. It is very interestingly described by Sanatana Goswami in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Sanatana Goswami is explaining how Narada Muni met with Prahlad Maharaj. And Narada Muni started glorifying Prahlad Maharaj, saying, you're such a great bhakta, you're such a great devotee. For the sake of the Lord, you underwent so much difficulties. You went through so much suffering, and this is for the sake of the Lord. And in fact, it is Lord Shiva who pointed out to Narada Muni Prahlad Maharaj is the best bhakta. He says, look, don't go to Vaikuntha, because initially Narada Muni was about to go to Vaikuntha. He was going up and up and up and up. Finally he reached Kailash. And in Kailash, Parvati said, I know who is the best bhakta. It's Lakshmi. You go to Vaikuntha. And Narada Muni was about to say it, and Shiva stopped him, and he said, by whispering in his ear, don't go there. Lakshmi is nice. But what was the price of your bhakti? There is no price. She's there in Vaikuntha. She's in opulence. Go down there. Go to Patalaloka. But Prahlad Maharaj is still living. And Prahlad Maharaj, look what he did, what the price he paid for his bhakti. And he started glorifying Prahlad Maharaj. And when Narada Muni came to Prahlad Maharaj, he again more or less repeated this. He said, you are such a great devotee. So much suffering you underwent for the sake of the Lord. And Prahlad Maharaj, when he heard this, he became, very miserable. He said, Don't say this to me. I'm not anybody. Because what did I do for you? I was just praying. What kind of bhakti it is? He totally nullified his bhakti. He said, I didn't do anything practical for the Lord. I was just meditating. And then Narada Muni says, but bhakti is meditation, you have to meditate, this is the best part of bhakti. And Prahlad Maharaj says, look at me, how I cannot even meditate properly. I'm trying to meditate on the Lord, but my mind is so easily disturbed. And he says, go to Hanuman, Hanuman is much better, look what he did for Ramachandra. He's better bhakti than me, because he did something practical. And here we have the same kind of dynamic in the sense that Narada Muni, he tested Dhruva Maharaj. And he knows Dhruva Maharaj is sincere. And he's ready to give him something. And what he's going to give him? He's going to give him some practical engagement by doing which he will ultimately please the Lord. By, you know, being engaged in this kind of service, he will ultimately please the Lord. And this is a very important point also of Prabhupada's teaching. Because Prabhupada, he was very much kind of against this idol conception of bhakti. On the same, because of the same reason as which Prahlad Maharaj gave in his conversation with Narada Muni. Of course we know that, you know, sometimes devotees are enamored by these processes. They go to Radha Kund and, you know, there's some Manasa Puja which they're supposed to do, and Manasi Sel, and you have your Siddha Deha. And, you know, you have Ekadasi Bhava, the 11 bhavas, 11 moods in which you serve the Lord. You know, the moods in the spiritual world are expressed through your dress and through your ornaments and through your service and through, you know, your age. So sometimes devotees are very much kind of, you know, intrigued by this process, which is a, you know, bona fide process in one sense, in Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. But please remember what Prahlad Maharaj answered to Narada Muni. He said, yes, meditation is good. Meditation can be an act of service, but only if you can meditate. This is a little condition which has to be fulfilled. If you are easily disturbed in your mind, don't try to pretend. Just do something practical, and in this way purify your heart. So, just do something for the Lord, otherwise, you know, you will be just, you know, doing this Manasi Puja, and, you know, some little distraction will come to your mind, and you will forget all about your Manasi Puja, and, you know, some fly will fly in, and, you know, you will be more concerned with the fly than with Krishna. So, the process which specifically is given to us, by which we can bhakti, we can have bhakti. And there is no doubt about it, if we apply it sincerely, is that we have to do something practical for the Lord. And by doing something practical for the Lord, by engaging our senses, Hrishikesha, Hrishikena, Hrishikena, Hrishikesha, Seven, Bhakti Ruchakya, as it is explained, by using our senses, by active senses, it's not specifically said, you know, that we only should use the mind in our bhakti. Yes, of course, ultimately bhakti is the matter of the heart. Ultimately bhakti is the matter of consciousness. But, Hrishikena, Hrishikesha, Seven, and Bhakti Ruchakya, the definition of bhakti which is given in Hari Bhakti Vilas and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by quoting tantras, or Narada Pancharatra, is very simple. It is said that you have to engage your senses in the service of the Lord. And by engaging the senses in the service of the Lord, by doing something for Him, you know, you please Him. By doing something, you will purify your consciousness, you purify your whole body, and ultimately you will understand the Lord, you will get the Lord. We will see what will happen with Dhruva Maharaj. He will be chanting the mantra, he will be eating very little, he will be standing on one leg. But ultimately, his whole consciousness will be concentrated on the service to his guru. And this is the best part of it. Actually, it's not the process itself which gives us bhakti, which purifies us, but our determination to serve the guru, to follow his instructions. This is what it is. It is also very interestingly explained by Sanatana Goswami in his interaction with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Sanatana Shiksha. It is said that if you get initiation, then you are supposed to achieve the perfection in chanting mantra, mantra siddhi. And in fact, mantra siddhi, this is a standard definition of mantra siddhi. Mantra siddhi achieved when you see the object of your mantra. Usually mantra contains the name of the deity. And mantra siddhi means you chant the mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And ultimately you have to see the person whom you are calling in person, in front of you. This is mantra siddhi. And it is explained in Sanatana Goswami and in this Sanatana Siksha that when you get a mantra from Guru during your initiation ceremony, during your Diksha, you get mantra and then you have to do Purascharan. And Purascharan is a specific process by which you obtain mantra siddhi. It is said that Purascharan means that Purascharana have five limbs or five angas. Purascharana means that you do puja 3 times a day, then you chant 10,000 time mantra. You know, we chant our Gayatri mantra 30 times, and it's a little too much for us. But Purascharana means you have to chant every day 10,000 time mantra. And then you have to do 1,000 ablations of water for Krishna, and then you have to do 100 ablations of ghee by doing sacrifice every day, and then you have to feed 10 brahmanas. So it's very simple to remember. 10,000 mantras, 1,000 ablations of water, 100 ablations of ghee, 10 brahmanas, and 3 times puja. Simple. This is what you're supposed to do. Get mantra siddhi. This is the choked out activity which we should do after our Diksha ceremony. But then, you know, understanding how hopeless it is. And this is a standard practice. This is what, you know, Brahmins are supposed to do. They get Diksha and they should do it, you know, every day they should be fully engaged in doing this. And then after that it is said that, you know, if you cannot do this, then please, who cannot do this, raise your hands. It is said, if you cannot do this, then just serve the Guru. That's it. Just do whatever your Guru tells you. And your Guru knows better what you're supposed to do. If your Guru tells you, you know, just carry some bricks. And you're doing this with this consciousness that I'm carrying bricks, not because it's bricks and I like to carry bricks, but because this is the order of my Guru. This is my service to my Guru. And my Guru is connecting me with Krishna. My Guru is giving me some practical service by which I can get Krishna. If we do this with this consciousness, if we say that, you know, I'm useless for all practical purposes, I'm not really capable of doing any sadhana. The only sadhana which I am capable of doing is this little desire which is there in my heart to serve my Guru, and I do what he says. With this consciousness, if I do this, then I'll get bhakti. And it is specifically said by Lord Chaitanya. This is the way to get bhakti. You know, if you cannot do purascharana, if you cannot do all this difficult phase of sadhana, still there is a hope. You know, you do what Krishna tells you, what your spiritual master tells you. And Srila Prabhupada, he was like this. He came to the West and he saw all these hippies and he, you know, he said, you chant 64 rounds a day. And the answer was, it's impossible. Well, sorry. He said, okay, 32. And the answer was, it's impossible. He said, okay, 25. The answer was, it's impossible. And then he said, okay, 16, but not one round left. He said, okay, we'll try. But then he said, the rest of the day you have to be engaged. The rest of the day you have to serve. And the rest of the day you have to serve this mission. The rest of the day you have to try to preach to other people. The rest of the day you have to be engaged in so many other different ways. But if we do it with this understanding that this is the order of Srila Prabhupada, which is coming directly from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then for sure we will attain all the perfections. It may come by the end of our life, it may not come immediately. And sometimes people also, devotees become impatient. Like recently I read one article, Why I Left This Home. And the devotee describes how he was in Vrindavan and how he was chanting. He was in ISKCON and he didn't see, you know, still the Manjari Swarupa didn't descend upon him and so many other things didn't happen to him. Therefore he decided to leave ISKCON. But it is specifically said, please listen carefully, it is explained by Vishnu Chakravarti, therefore it is also explained by Sri Jivaraswami, is that, you know, Krishna is not in a hurry. You know, you might chant and chant and chant. It's specifically explained in the connection with the Sajjanil story. Where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is explaining why Ajamil didn't get Krishna immediately when he first chanted the name Narayana. It's not that he only chanted the name Narayana at the very end of his life. He was engaged in this namavas, offenseless chanting of Narayana's name all along, at least for 5 years or how many years was his youngest son. He was always calling him Narayana, Narayana, Narayana do this, Narayana come here, Narayana let's play. Still, only the last chanting of Narayana's name gave the fruit, more or less. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is asking this question, why? And he says, because the Lord is not obliged, you know, it takes time. He says, even though it's a pure chanting, it may be very pure, still the fruit doesn't come immediately. As much as the fruit from the tree, you know, the tree, it takes time before the tree will bring the fruit. The tree is there. It's ready to give the fruit, but it takes some time. So in the same way, he says, if you do it in a pure way, don't expect the fruits immediately. Krishna is not obliged to come just when you, for the first time, call him with a pure heart. No, he will come. He will come, you know, somewhere by the end of your life. It may take a few years. 30, 40, 50, 70, sometimes 80. But don't be discouraged. He will come. If you have this very firmly established within your mind, that this is my service to my Guru, and I'm doing this because he told me. This is my sadhana. This is my way of serving Krishna. And all the perfections will come because this is the sure path of bhakti, and by pleasing the pure devotee we can get bhakti. There is no doubt about it, because he specifically deputed with this role of giving bhakti to the conversion souls. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.
I have a couple questions, Maharaj. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a purport where Prabhupada cites Bhaktivinoda Thakur as identifying three types of Sukriti. Bhaganmukhi Sukriti, Mokshanmukhi Sukriti, and Bhaktyanmukhi Sukriti. The Bhaktya Mukhi Sukriti is a piety that leads to devotional service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Prabhupada would sometimes describe how we make deposits in a transcendental bank account. Even the Jnata Sukriti, you know, the description of the nectar devotion, if one sees the wrath cart, you know, then his devotion is guaranteed, something along those lines. Mm. So, you know, the nature of my question is that, you know, there's, you described how the Madhyama Bhakta will be able to identify a proper candidate for mercy. If one has a vicious heart, then he'll neglect that person. Of course, there's a certain role, I would presume, that would be part of the understanding of Bhaktivinoda Sukriti, that the origin of that Sukriti is some kind of mercy from the Madhyama Bhakta. But that may be, it may also be almost indiscriminately disseminated. For example, there's one devotee that became a devotee because he was walking in San Francisco, and San Francisco is famous for being windy. So there was wind that blew a piece of paper and it stuck on his leg. He picked a piece of paper off his leg, and it was the back page of a Back to Godhead magazine with an invitation to the Sunday feast. So he went to the Sunday feast, and that was the beginning of his devotional service. But nevertheless, there must have been some receptivity, maybe from previous birth, you know, that inspired him like that. So I'm wondering, you know, I'm just looking, you know, at the causeless nature of bhakti. Then, you know, actually it's the Madhyama Bhakta that provides the facility for someone to, you know, and he gives the process where you know, plants the seed, which is basically the process. But then there, you know, it seems like, you know, that's a big part, you know, that bhakti-mukhi sukriti.
Yeah, sukriti is not ruled out, because bhakti-mukhi sukriti means that you are, in one way or another, is engaged in, you are engaged in bhakti in one way or another, without knowing that this is bhakti. This is what bhakti and mukhi sukriti is. And this is not really ruling. I didn't actually explain it properly in one sense. I missed the last link in Vishwanatha Chakravarti's explanation. Because his premise, initial premise, is that bhakti is causeless. And the causeless nature of bhakti is expressed in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where it is said, bhaktyasam jataya bhaktya. Only bhakti is the cause of bhakti. So when he says that Madhyama Bhakta is the cause of bhakti, then he asks one more question. Why Madhyama Bhakta is the cause of bhakti? And he says, it is bhakti within the heart of a Madhyama Bhakti. Bhakta is inspiring him to give bhakti to others. So the causeless nature of bhakti is preserved, but at the same time we know the cause, mercy of Madhyama Bhakta. Okay? So when we say bhakti mukhi sukriti, first of all, the bhakti which ultimately, yes, this is also the cause of bhakti, our unconscious engagement in some bhakti activity. The causeless nature of bhakti in this way is preserved because it is bhakti which is causes bhakti, right? When we hear some holy name in the arena, like that, somebody told me a story. It was a Harinam in Moscow, and one lady was there, and she was watching and watching and watching. And she liked it, you know. And then the Harinam went by, and then she was with the devotees, and in this way she came to a temple, you know, with the Harinam. And then she was looking around, she couldn't understand anything, but then she saw that everyone is inside, and she asked, where can I get sari? So by the end of the day, she wasn't sari, she was with beads and she was chanting. So, this also happens sometimes. But, you know, you accumulate some bhakti because you are involved in bhakti. But again, ultimately, this is all the cause. That the cause of it is some Madhyama Bhakta who is behind this, some Madhyama Bhakta who said to his disciples, go on the street and chant the holy name. or the Madhyama Bhakta or preacher who sat in the Ukraine Vertigotic magazine and let the wind blow and carries the leaves of Vertigotic to some unfortunate souls.
And that the other question I had is this description that you gave from the Bhagavatamrita of how Lord Shiva identified Plad Maharaj as an example of a exalted devotee who exemplified bhakti in the heart, because he went through so many difficulties on behalf of the Lord. And, kind of referencing the discussion yesterday about Tapo Divyam, I would understand that would be an example of Tapo Divyam that is actually, because it almost seems that Prabhupada, because he quotes this Nayam Deho Deha Bhajani Loke verse so much, it's so much a part of his preaching, to contrast, why waste your life, like, the devotee you mentioned at the nudist colony, that was Gaurari, I personally know, and he was wasting his life, so then, he was awoken to a proper utilization of his life, which almost always means some kind of a difficulty. With an ISKCON, oftentimes a difficulty is living within a society, and having such diverse personalities and kind of the difficulties of.
No, when I said that, Tapo Divyam, of course, there is a room in our life for austerity and, to follow four regulative principles, isn't it? Prabhupada explains this, and austerity is not bad. Of course, devotees, they have to be austere and detached, and this is all good. And it can be a part of our sadhana or devotion. Devotional practices in this way, it is bhakti. When I was speaking about this, that this dry austerity, which is also there, it's not the ango bhakti, it's ango dhyan. Usually, to obtain dhyan, you have to perform severe austerity, and it's a kind of dry austerity. The only dhyan means that you are engaged in devotional service and you are not living like a two-legged animal. That's the point. That's but ultimately, we have our austerities, like Ekadashi. The main point of austerity is fasting. The main form, the main kind of austerity is always fasting, right? So we fast in the Ekadashi, this is austerity, this is bhakti austerity. But there are so many fasts which are there in the Vedas. Prichara fast, or it was the moon, when you take a morsel, you take 14 morsels when there's full moon, and then you get less and less and less according to the phase of the moon. And then you fast on the Amavasya day, and then again make it up to the 14 or 15 morsels. So many fasts are there, which is recommended in Vedic literature. So, but it's not recommended for bhakti. Even for Ekadashi, it was not very strict. Is that if you can find, but don't. Just don't become proud about it.
It seemed like there would just be difficulties that one would naturally encounter in the course of rendering service to the Lord.
Yeah, that's natural. That's natural.
And that's healthy. That's conducive to that.
That's what Queen Kunti says.
Right.
And Jagadguru, the guru of the universe, sends you some difficulties you accept, because by accepting this, you will have to not bother us, and you will be free from this samsara.
Yes.
It was interesting that Mother was saying that it has to do with not being vicious.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could elaborate on the example of Mukherjee. He was kind of
innocent. Basically, he was doing it not because of viciousness of his heart, but because he was, you know, he was for the family tradition, more or less. You know, he was born with this kind of tradition. He said, "My father was doing it, and I'm doing this, and you know, my sons will also do this." And he says, "You know, please don't do it. You know, why should you do it? It's not good for you." And he pleaded. And you know, the innocence of his heart was proven when he was receptive for this plea of Narada Muni. That's, you know, Narada Muni didn't preach to him. He said, "Just please, I have one request. You can still kill the animals, but do it not halfway, which you do so far, but do it, you know, do it in the proper way. If you kill, kill." And he said, "Yeah, I will do it. What else should I do?" Innocence was, you know, is kind of, you know, readiness to serve, to listen to a sacred person, to be receptive for what he has to say. Whereas the viciousness or stubbornness is manifested in this way, that we are not honest. You know, when we see a saintly person, it's usually quite impressive. Everything about a saintly person is impressive, how humble he is, how genuine he is. So if we can appreciate him within our heart, then this is all the service. If we say, I have seen these pretenders so many times, these pretenders, they have this clothes, you know, it's not difficult to get this dye in the market, and they have this clothes, of this color, and, you know, if people are of this nature, then it's, they will not get mercy. Appreciation is a service.
I got one more question. Here's an interesting case example. There's one devotee who is now the temple president, one of the largest temples in America, and he was the son of one of the wealthiest people in Fiji. And he and his father, the father had this palatial mansion right next to the temple in Fiji. And they were Shaivites. And they were very disturbed by Mangalakti. And so father and son made a plan to blow the temple up. And it was a constant meditation that they had. Ultimately, I don't know all the details, but this devotee told me the story. And the son, somehow or other, became a devotee. And, you know, he was a practicing lawyer. His father was a huge businessman. And after this, the father didn't give the son blessings. He just went ahead and became a devotee. And then the father lost all of his wealth. It just everything crashed because he maintained this attitude of intense negativity towards mm-hmm. devotees. So now, you know.
So the son became disciple of an Krishna.
Yeah, you know who it is. Mm-hmm. So then, now the father is actually living in the temple. He's appreciative of his son, but somehow or other he hasn't been able to overcome the personal. Conception of the absolute, you know, he's kind of fixed on that. He hasn't really entered bhakti. But so here's an example that it seems that there was a great deal of viciousness within the heart.
Well, what happened, I don't also exactly remember the details of the story, but what happened, the son came to the temple, and he met this Tamalkrishna Maharaj, and Tamalkrishna Maharaj told him that, we will move from this place on our own, if you are service to it. But, first you should, you try to do what you are doing for some time, and if it doesn't work upon your heart, then we will move, no problem. And he said, of course, no problem, I will do it. And he did what Tamalkrishna Maharaj said to him, and he became his initiated disciple. The temple is still there. So his innocence was that he followed the instructions.
Oh,
even in the way of challenge, it was a kind of challenging way. There was some conflict, but he quite foolishly he followed it. It really is. That's how it works. Okay. Thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai. Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai.